You're listening to Goodfellas Minute 13.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care.
Hello and welcome to Goodfellas Minute, the only podcast that analyzes the Martin Scorsese film Goodfellas. Oh, we're running out of them. Minute at a time.
they're adjectives, Josh. Come on.
I know. I just feel like I've already used three of them, and that's all I had. I am Josh, as previously noted. Flanagan, I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And from the Star Wars Minute and Alphabetical Podcast, we've got Pete the Retailer.
Hello.
And Alex Robinson.
Good evening.
Good evening. This minute starts with Meet the Kid Henry. And it ends with tipping off about loads.
Good night, everybody.
All right.
So the first thing that we sort of see here is this great insert shot of the money, because everything in this minute,
literally.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, this flowing camera going over. You know, Martin Scorsese. You know, doesn't cut a ton until he does, and we've just been floating through the party, and it's just like close up. Look at this money just going right into your pocket.
Well, yeah. That's an example, and later in the minute, there's another example of visual actions that are tied to real life character definition that's never talked about on screen, but visually we see it happen, and it helps you flesh out who this person is. Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. which is fascinating. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
this guy puts money in your pocket.
Yeah,
right, literally.
Literally. It's also a great example of our recurring tally of bad acting by young Henry as he goes, thank you.
I love that.
I didn't think that was bad acting necessarily.
I think that's one of the best things. It's like, you know, I hate to keep bringing it. Well, I don't hate to, but I don't mean to keep bringing it back to Star Wars. But some of the things that, you know, Mark Hamill gets a bad rap for is stuff where he's acting like a goofy kid because he's supposed to be. So I think that is a good example of him being, you know, awkward kid who's not as cool as he thinks he is.
The benefit of the doubt then for being that. And I feel like, because here's the thing about this movie is that there were, you know, people talk about it, there was a lot of improv. Mm-hmm. And they would just, you know, let it run. And I don't know that this kid could hang with De Niro.
Well,
in that sense. And you can easily look at it and go, well, no, he was acting like a kid who didn't really quite know what to do or how to be cool. But I don't know that flies, because I think in order for him to stick around and to stay in the organization and do all this stuff, he would have to have done that pretty good. So when the actor kind of is just like, okay, nice to meet you. Like, it was like he's in a different movie. It's very perfunctory.
Yeah.
But I guess that was cool. Avert your eyes. Don't look at him.
Well, I don't know. I was just afraid that somebody, this is like the first scene he shot, and he thought that Henry was hard of hearing.
I guess I thought that, like, I don't know, I'm with Pete in this one. To me, it seemed like a kind of awkward kid, and the fact that he kind of, like, when he thanks him, he kind of, like, averts his eyes.
Yeah, he doesn't look at him, yeah.
Yeah, so to me, it almost seemed like more like he knew that he was supposed to be, like deferential and kind of, you know, like, I thought of, like, a guy who would be, like, in a whorehouse or something. He's like, oh, here you go, and she's like, thank you, like, It doesn't quite jibe with the role. The Henry's supposed to be really excited and starstruck by these guys, and he seems kind of sheepish and embarrassed. But
well, also,
I don't know.
This guy has Jimmy has a reputation, so maybe you want to really just watch your ass around it. You could, there's different ways to look at it. So the interpretation is definitely there.
Yeah.
So he tips him $20 to bring him his 7-7, and then he tells him to keep him coming.
Keep him coming.
And we get a freeze frame with another great Paul Sorvino face.
Yes.
what would $20 be today?
Well, it would be one fifth of $876.
So about $292.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So a 7-7 would really be like a 43-43 or something like that at this point.
$175.
Thanks, Obama.
that's not a cheap drink. Again, working really hard for this lifestyle.
Yeah.
You're paying way more for that drink than you would at even the top end clubs in Manhattan.
It's a good drink. I'm telling you, it's a good drink.
You think that Henry's over there, he's putting butter or mayonnaise all over the shitty bread.
The rye.
He's not making a good sandwich. He's not making a good drink. I guess he's just bringing it over.
He's more of a bartender than a sandwich maker. He's no sandwich artist. I had a note about 7-7 since we're talking about that.
Yes.
due to a weird kind of reorganization slash whatever with the Seagram's company, I think you don't really hear a lot about 7&7 recently in the past several years.
Except when you go out with me.
I was going to say.
Sure. But I think it because Coca-Cola owns part of Seagram's now, and 7-Up is owned by Pepsi.
Oh.
And so it's the Cola Wars. They're back.
Or it's like it's like the Fantastic Four, to put it in terms that we're all familiar with. It's like the Fantastic Four, Marvel, Sony thing. Or not Spider-Man.
To clarify for anyone who might not know, 7&7 is my drink of choice, inherited from my grandfather. He taught me, ironically, at the age of 7, how to make it. And it's a highball drink, and it's made of Seagram 7 and 7-Up, hence 7&7.
Is that gin?
No, it's Canadian blended whiskey. And so much so, it is kind of looked down upon by dive bars and stuff like that, because it's like sweet whiskey.
That makes sense for you.
Yeah, and so I get a lot of looks when I actually order it. But what's interesting is that, like, going back to the Cola Wars, I've been drinking a 7-7 for 10 years now. I doubt I've ever actually gotten 7-Up in one. It's just whatever comes out of the fountain at the bar.
Sprite, usually.
Yeah, right. Sprite. Yeah, it's usually Sprite. Yeah, yeah. The glory days of 7-7 are behind us.
Hmm. You ever take a sip and go,
"Oh, they're bright." I went to a bar once and they tried to put Sierra Mist in it, and I was like, nope, do not do that. So right. Yeah, and they thought I was crazy.
Yeah, apparently I need to go back and watch, but apparently 7&7 is all over Mean Streets too.
Oh,
apparently they ordered a bunch of times in that.
I've only seen that once.
Yeah, I saw it in school, and I haven't since.
It does not have the narrative thrust of this film.
Yeah. No,
it doesn't. It's not quite as focused.
So to refer back to my grandfather, he told me to stick my finger in the glass and pour the Seagram 7 up to my third knuckle, and then fill the rest of the glass with 7-Up. That's how you made it.
Does that change as your hand grows?
I don't know. He was weird. He was drunk a lot.
Well, it's probably based off of as you grow, your appetite for booze grows too. So.
Oh yeah, that was clearly apparent towards the end of his life.
So your 8-year-old self only needed so much.
Yeah,
right.
But he was having you make them for him.
For him, yeah, okay. For him, yeah, yeah. Anyway,
what's that?
I just didn't like the finger as the measuring stick. That never sat well with me.
Look, also, you were a child. You had filthy hands.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And I'm pouring booze.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that too.
It was a different time. It was the 80s.
Thelma Schumacher did not edit Mean Streets.
Maybe that's
why.
That could be why.
So I know we're going to talk about Jimmy Burke in a minute, but let's just a little. What was it? They start talking about what Jimmy's into, and they describe two things. They say hits. That was something he did, but that was just business.
Mm-hmm.
But what he really loved to do, it was steal. Yep. Now this is another example of them really minimizing what it is that their organization does. Oh, hits. That was just business. They gloss over the murders.
the almost serial killer level number of murders on a yearly basis.
I mean, that is as much as one can underplay that someone is a hired killer.
So this is tying into it. So Robert De Niro is playing the character Jimmy Conway in the movie. It's based on Jimmy Burke, who was a real Irish gangster who worked in the Vario crew. Oddly enough, Jimmy Conway was Jimmy Burke's birth name. So the fake movie name is actually the real person's real birth name. Yeah. So
pulling a Red Fox.
Yeah.
Did you guys already talk about why they changed some names, or is this the first opportunity to? Basically?
Well, we've talked about the fact that Henry Hill is the only real name in the movie, but we didn't talk about why. Do you know why?
No, that's what I'm wondering, because there's other
Everybody. No, every name was changed. Every name was changed for Henry Hill. Yeah. Yeah, that's probably why.
At the time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's just a good insurance policy.
Yeah.
You know, both personally and I guess litigiously.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm guessing. I don't know. Because you can't really corroborate most of this.
Yep. So more about Jimmy Burke. As mentioned in the movie and by us previously, he was Irish, so he could never be a made man. But he worked closely with the Vario crew, and so that let him work within the mafia, which doesn't exist. He was born in New York. His mother was from Dublin. His father was unknown, and nobody knows who he is. He was placed in foster care at age 2 and then grew up in orphanages and foster families, so that probably explains the drifting to crime. He became active in the 1950s and primarily focused on stealing at first. And he worked at a South Ozone Park in Queens and then eventually East New York and Brooklyn with the Vario crew.
I didn't know until recently that East New York had ever been an Italian neighborhood. I didn't.
Yeah. The Pitkin Avenue. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you know about The Hole? I just found out found out about that when I was reading about East New York.
No, what about The Hole?
There's a zone kind of like right, you know, Brooklyn, Queens border kind of. So like kind of the north part of East New York. And it's like the landscape around it is a little bit high. So it like it sinks down and it floods all the time. So nobody wants to build anything there. So it's like a shanty town, more or less.
That's fantastic.
And it's like apparently people are like, yeah, it's just like it's like the Wild West in there. Like cops don't really go in there. Like every couple of years, they'll pull a body or two out of there from like mob hits. And
Jesus,
it's down the block a little bit. I mean, you know, 5 minute drive from here.
Huh. Wow. Jeez.
I have a bit of a Jimmy Burke trivia. Ooh,
you have more information that? About The Hole?
No, not about The Hole, unfortunately. Oh. But it's I was reading the information about poor Jimmy Burke, and it's like there was one story. One of Jimmy Burke's foster fathers died in a car crash in 1944, so he would have been 13 years old. Jimmy, how did his foster father die? Because he was turning around in the car to beat Jimmy in the back seat. And the car crashed. His foster father dies. His foster mother is blames him for his foster father's death. So beats Jimmy virtually daily until he's placed in a new foster home. That almost seems like if it wasn't so horrifying, it would be comical.
You can't make it up. Right. Yeah.
The fact totally. That like you made me crash the car, boy, because I had to turn around to beat you while I was driving.
If he would just have behaved, you know, it's his fault.
I feel like he didn't internalize that. as portrayed by Robert De Niro, anyway.
Right.
Yeah. So going back to the murders, it was said that roughly about in the years that Jimmy Burke was active, about 12 dead bodies a year were found around JFK Airport attributed to him, and basically he had bribed so many cops that they would give him tips on who was becoming informants, and he would get to them and kill them before they could be informants. That was his job.
Efficient.
Yeah. And
like he's tipping everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, and he must have been putting out just millions a year.
Yeah. And yeah. From the book Wise Guy that Goodfellas is based on, Henry Hill had this to say about Jimmy Burke's bribing of the cops. Jimmy Burke once said that bribing cops is like feeding elephants at the zoo. All you need is peanuts. There you go. Bribing cops.
Allegedly.
It was just business.
So we see Jimmy in action hijacking a truck, which I've got to imagine. I couldn't find the location of this scene, but it's got to be somewhere around Greenwood Cemetery, right?
I don't know. I was Googling also trying to figure out where, because it says, you know, in the script that I was looking at, which seems to be like an early draft or something.
The scripts are online are a mess, by the way, because there's so much was improv. And yeah, but anyway.
But it says that it's, you know, on a road near Idlewild, which later JFK. Yeah. So I was looking for cemeteries around there, and I couldn't figure out exactly what it would. There are no major ones over there, so yeah. I don't know.
This has to be. The locations are always where is it supposed to be, and then where did they shoot it? You know, like the cab stand was supposed to be on Pitkin Avenue, but it was in Astoria. They shot it in Astoria.
Almost everything at this point has been shot in Astoria.
Yeah. And that's what makes me think that this is near Greenwood Cemetery, which non-New Yorkers might not know. It's basically an enormous cemetery in the middle of Queens, and it cradles the BQE, LIE, kind of all the parkways kind of connecting. It's a connection point.
The same one that he shot at the end of Gangs of New York. Also, isn't Greenwood Cemetery in Brooklyn?
Yeah, wait. This is the other cemetery.
Oh, did I get it wrong? Oh, what's the one in Queens?
The one that the Jackie Robinson goes right through.
You're right. I switched the two. God damn it.
That I can't think of what it's called.
That's the one in Gangs of New York at the end.
Yeah, so who knows? It's a cemetery. Who cares?
Right. It's a big cemetery with some golf courses in the middle.
The new Calvary Cemetery. That's right by Queens Boulevard and the Parkway. Yeah, that's what it is.
Okay.
Yeah, it's New Calvary.
So as we get back to the movie here, one of my favorite things here is the stink eye from the thugs.
Yeah.
On the truck driver as they get out. They both pull like full-on movie tough guy.
Well, they're doing that, but the truck driver is also being aloof guy.
Yeah.
Right? Like he's like, you know, like he's like trying not to be intimidated, you know?
Because theoretically, like someone had tipped them off, so he might have known about it.
Yeah.
And so he's playing along, but he knows what's going on, so he's not really that scared because this was pretty routine.
Yeah. But we do get the intimidating Jimmy. You might know who we are, but we know who you are.
Well, I need everybody at home to go ahead and take the sideways look drink. This is the second appearance of the sideways look.
Yep.
You look right or left, and then just before you say the threatening thing, you turn back. That's the sideways look drink.
Well done.
Alternate theory about why this truck driver might be kind of not intimidated is because I think he was mainly like a grip. He wasn't really an actor.
Fair enough.
His credits are mainly just kind of like, yeah, he moved some cables. And then he was in, his movies are this and then A Mighty Wind.
You guys are really bringing more to the show than I think that we
can. Wow, yeah, it's really impressive. It's really almost to the point where, do you guys just want the show? You can have.
They just want to show us, like, listen, we know who you are.
I just wanted to do my thing, which is, you know, finding these. There are no Imperial officers in this, so I had to.
So it's truck drivers.
So if Jimmy rooted for the movie Bad Guys, was he just always disappointed? Because movie Bad Guys never win.
Yeah. I think Empire was his favorite of the Star Wars films, though.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Been fine.
So, as we were talking about when he tipped Henry the $20, he slides the $50 in the truck driver's wallet. Mm-hmm. That was actually something that Jimmy Burke did in real life. That's directly taken from.
He must have been making so much money.
Yeah, I know.
Or he just didn't care.
Yeah. Also, and if you're keeping track at home of clothes I wish I had, Robert De Niro's red jacket in the scene.
Yeah, that's a good jacket.
It's a good jacket.
Now, is that little document that he puts in his pocket, is that a driver's license?
Yeah.
From the time?
Yeah, that's what I gotta guess.
That's why I think he says, we know who you are, because he takes his license, so they have like his information. His
address and everything, yeah.
Yeah.
They doxed him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do want to highlight when Henry is narrating and he's talking about all the great things they stole. Like booze, cigarettes, razor blades, and shrimps and lobsters.
Shrimp and lobsters were best. Now, the point about that I want to note is that shrimp and lobster always went fast, and that's just one more sort of sign that how mundane all this was.
Yeah,
like there are restaurants everywhere who just would not think for a second about there's some men outside who have shrimp and lobster to sell us.
Right.
On a short notice.
Right.
Sure, let's buy it. Let's serve it to people.
That's as evidenced by the next scene, which is Jimmy and some other people you see unloading a truck of cigarettes in the wide open in like next to the cab stand.
Yeah.
Like just brazen about it.
Jimmy the gent.
Jimmy the gent, so they called him. So we see them unloading the package of cigarettes and loading up a crossing guard who is also smoking while she's holding all the cigarettes. So she likes to smoke.
The best.
The crossing guard is a comedian named Margaret Smith.
Maggie,
look her up. She's on Comedy Central. You can just do Margaret Smith, and like you can see some of her bits from the late 90s.
Wow.
And she sounds exactly like that. So you know, it's like, oh, that looks kind of like her. And then she starts talking, and it's like, oh yeah, that's her.
Yeah. Martin Scorsese likes having comedians. Casino is filled with funny people playing straight roles.
Yeah.
It's very strange. Yeah,
that's true.
But maybe this is what whetted his appetite for that. It's like, I like having funny people around on the set. We should have more comedians. Next time, all comedians in the movie.
Yeah, Albert Brooks in Taxi Driver. He had, famously Jerry Lewis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a thing. He must, and he himself, he's not a comedian, but he keeps.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's weird that he's there.
Emo Phillips was originally supposed to play Henry in this. scheduling did not work out.
Do it.
I've always wanted to be a gangster.
I cannot tell you if that's a low point or a high point for this show.
It's still early, Josh.
Yeah, I know.
Pall Malls.
Yes.
They're all Pall Malls.
Yeah.
Pall Malls.
Pall Malls, which are apparently originally pronounced Pell Mills.
Yeah.
Then once they were not allowed to advertise them on the radio anymore, you can't. Nobody knew, so they've just been called Pall Malls for the last like 70 years.
Huh. I have one more bit of a Jimmy Burke trivia. Jimmy Burke was engaged to a woman named Mickey, and I guess Mickey's previous boyfriend was causing them some troubles. And you certainly don't want if your ex is dating a gangster, just let it go. Don't. So apparently
don't ask him if they want some of anyway, that's later.
Right. So the suitor showed up murdered and chopped up into over a dozen pieces in his car. And they think that our old friend Jimmy Burke was responsible.
It was just a car accident. It was something. It was
coincidence, yeah.
And Jimmy married that gal.
Yeah.
He did. So, but it's weird that almost has a parallel later on. Are we allowed to talk about stuff that happens in the future in the movie?
Yeah, we're not being decided we're not going to be as tight with as you guys are in Star Wars.
But I thought that was
the
weird...
movie started with a flashback and that threw us all off.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Yeah,
right. So technically, this has all already happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and will happen again.
Right. Yeah,
that's what they never understood.
But I thought that was a weird parallel with the whole thing with
pistol whipping. Right.
Yeah. Kind of a echo of that. But
I had two other people who played Jimmy Burke or Jimmy Conway in different other, I think there are both TV movies.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one was, I don't think either one was theatrical.
Good
doesn't seem like
two on
be.
NBC.
In 2001, there was a TV movie called The Big Heist about the Lufthansa heist.
Yep.
Jimmy Burke was played by Donald Sutherland.
Wow.
So picture that.
So Canadian. Well,
yeah. Look at that spectrum. Yeah.
Which actually, he looks maybe a little bit more like the real Jimmy Burke. The real Jimmy Burke is kind of like
looks pretty Italian. He's saggy mustachio face.
Well, that's the ongoing trend in this movie of the actors portraying much more handsome versions of the real life people.
right.
Well,
I don't think it's the only movie that does that.
Yeah, I know.
Pretty much every Hollywood movie, there's a so.
In 1991, there was a movie called The $10 Million Getaway. Again, I think it's another TV movie. Same deal. It was just about the Lufthansa heist. And in that one, John Mahoney, who's Frasier's dad on Frasier, played Jimmy Burke.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, stay tuned to this podcast, because when we get to the Lufthansa heist, that's going to be a treasure trove of information.
Just sit back and let it happen. Pretty excited about that. Do we have anything else for this minute? I mean, though, this one sort of appearance that I guess is notable.
Let's talk about that tomorrow.
All right. Well, you see, it's the end of this.
Yeah.
We'll update the F count. Still at zero. We're one for Monday, and then nothing since then.
We got a lot of catching up. There's going to be a minute with like 10 of them.
Yeah, I was promised. At this point, I should have 6, and we've got 1. So.
If we're going to a minute, then they got some catching up to do already.
Mm-hmm.
So right. I suppose that is all for minute 13. You can listen tomorrow for minute 14. Until then, you can check us out on Twitter, Goodfellas Min, Instagram at Goodfellas Minute. You can find our episodes at goodfellasminute.com. Also, check out ifanboy.com for a weekly comic book, I can't say it, podcast. We've been doing it for 10 years, and now I can't say it. You guys going to come back tomorrow?
Sure.
I'll see what my schedule allows.
I'm glad we got continuity of that joke.
Yeah, I've decided, I remembered, I was like, they really go with it. And they maintain the illusion, so I'm gonna do the same for them. I am Josh.
I'm Ron, and this was Goodfellas Minute.
Or will I go from rags to riches? My fate is up.